Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. What a pleasure to have you in live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Jerome Bettis, haven't talked to him in years, will stop by today. Tom Verducci, World Series begins tonight. My buddy Peter Schrager, Mark Sanchez, we're loaded today. 1 hour from now, the Herd hierarchy. What the heck do we do with the Bengals? What do we do with the Raiders? Those were my last place teams. What do I do with them?
Tennessee.
Tennessee's always been, you know, I didn't think they'd be great this year, but they're always like a dilemma for me. What are they too Derrick Henry dependent? So it is great to have everybody in today. So I before we get to this, I'm going to do this in about 10 minutes. I talked to Tom Brady yesterday. Jim Gray, who's been a sportscaster of some renown for a long time, put 12 of us on a panel, or not a panel, just a Zoom call yesterday to ask Tom Brady a question. And so I thought about it all weekend, and I told you what the question was, and you'll hear what the question is in 10 minutes. But I asked him, Tom gave the longest, most thoughtful answer to any question I've ever asked a pro athlete. No surprise, the GOAT. He gave a 4-minute and 50-minute answer. It was so well thought out. It was, you know, it was classic Tom Brady, conscientious, and, you know, thanked him. But it was like, wow. So I'm going to play that for you, the answer. And I'm only going to play a minute of it. I could almost just give it a segment because it was so interesting. Not the question, but the answer was so interesting. So we'll get to that. I want to start with this, though. I can think two things at the same time. I know you can't on Twitter, but you can in real life. I can think Pete Carroll has been great for the Seattle Seahawks, and I can simultaneously think, hey, maybe it's time to go. And when he got to Seattle, and the reputation for Pete has always been he burns white hot, and then he kind of burns people out. Did that in New England. Did that in USC. And I think he's doing it in Seattle. His first year with the Seahawks in 2010, pre-Russell Wilson, I looked it up this morning, they were blown out 9 times. The next year, they were blown out 4 times, but their losses were more competitive, but they still had a losing record. And he'd been fired twice before that in the NFL. But Pete, as he's won a Super Bowl, and this happened to Belichick in New England, Pete got more power. And then when Paul Allen, the late, great Paul Allen, passed away, Pete got ultimate power. And I don't like my coaches to have too much power. I love Belichick. Stay away from the draft. Pete Carroll's great. Stay away from the draft. Let the GM do that. But it's interesting. Belichick, post-Tom Brady, he's starting to kind of percolate here. Sean Payton, post-Drew Brees, well, they're 4-2. Mike Tomlin, as Big Ben has aged or been hurt, never had a losing season. Pete Carroll, he's never won in the NFL without Russell Wilson. Doesn't mean he can't coach. Doesn't mean he wasn't great for USC. Doesn't mean he won't go to Canton. I like Pete. But I've been asking this for 3 years now as Pete's gotten more and more power. What does Seattle do well that's not directly connected to Russell Wilson? The last 5 first-round draft picks, no Pro Bowlers, no hits, 2 busts. The last 4 drafts total, Pete's had huge influence, 2 hits. In the last 4 drafts total, DK Metcalf and a punter. My people in the industry that I've known for years, that I've used as sources, always say the same thing. Seattle's weird. Their drafts are weird. Why? Because the coach has too much power. And I like Pete. But you've watched the last 2 weeks without Russell Wilson. It's unwatchable. You've watched the last 3 weeks without Russell Wilson playing a full game. It's unwatchable. 12 years is a long time to be in one place. And it doesn't mean he is not a legend. But when they made that move for Jamal Adams, that was Pete Carroll. 2 firsts, a third, and a player for a safety, a box safety? That was a Hail Mary. That was a Legion of Boom Hail Mary. It was trying to throw money at a lot of mistakes, and that's a bad sign for any business. And I'll tell you this right now, and I believe it, Russell Wilson will not be in Seattle in 2 years if Pete's there. I think he's worn out. He's exhausted, and I can think two things simultaneously. I can think Pete's great. Pete's been amazing. Pete's a legend. Pete should go to Canton. Pete is all that, and maybe it's time. Or he stays, and he gets out of the personnel department because they don't draft well anymore. They don't. Now, to Pete's credit, after they lost again last night, to Pete's credit, he acknowledges how valuable that Russell Wilson has been to him and the franchise.
I've been here a long time, and if we didn't have Russell, I probably wouldn't have been here a long time. Because think of all the magic that he's created in the years. He's got numbers and stats and fourth quarter, this is and that's and all that stuff. You know, one of the winningest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. And it'll be really fun when he comes back and plays football again for us this year.
So he doesn't lack self-awareness. He doesn't lack self-awareness. Pete's smart. He knows more football than I ever will. But his career, you know, after you've had three or four or five jobs, there is a trend. There is something we can follow. With the Patriots, with USC, with the Seahawks, great energy. Burns hot. Players buy in. Players love his mantras, his enthusiasm, his energy. Wears gum out. And you know, there are some things he does very well. I've had multiple Seahawk players tell me that Pete Carroll meetings are brilliant. They're Belichickian. They're as good as anybody in the league. Like Andy Reid, Belichick, Pete Carroll, their team meetings are like buttoned down, a science, the envy of the industry. College or pro, he's one of the five best meeting coaches in the world. Like just, he's been doing it a long time. He's good at it. But I'm looking at this team more and more. And it's funny about guys. And I think about this all the time. We all want power. And it's often the end of us. Belichick, after about four Super Bowls, he had all the power. He was a football god. And they gave him all the power. And their drafts went into the tank. Because you can't be a GM and a coach simultaneously. Pete Carroll got the Seahawks their first Super Bowl. Should have had two. Pete got more power. Paul Allen passes away. Look at their drafts. The more power Pete gets, the worse it gets. Now, Andy Reid doesn't have that power. Andy Reid keeps winning games. You know, and by the way, Sean Payton, they got a real Mickey Loomis, a real GM. They got a great cap guy. They got Jeff Ireland's one of the best personnel people. Guys tend to want power, then you give it to them, and it's the end of them. And the only way to me you keep Pete around is if Pete gets out of personnel, does what he does great, coaches his butt off, lets Russ run the offense, because right now, nothing this team does that's not connected to Russell Wilson is done well. All right, so this is really interesting to me. The Tom Brady bit will be in about 5 minutes. So the Packers put Devontae Adams this Thursday in what we are calling the greatest Thursday night NFL game in the history of the world. The Packers go to Arizona to play the Cardinals. It's going to be a great game, right? Even though I think Arizona is going to whack them now. And the reason I think that is Devontae Adams, a tremendous wide receiver, friend of our show, he's on the COVID-19 list, so he won't play. He won't travel. We don't know. Physically, he could be just fine, but he's on the list. And what was fascinating, and I've always said this, don't listen to the media, don't listen to fans. Fans are too emotional. Media's got agendas. Listen to Vegas. It's all about the money. They don't care about anything other than the lettuce. So the line for this game was 3.5. And that's about right. Arizona's favored. They're at home. You know, a home crowd is worth about 3 points. So what they're saying is Green Bay and Arizona neutral field, yeah, it'd be an even game. If it was in Green Bay, they'd be favored by three. If it's in Arizona, they're favored by 3, 3.5. The minute Devontae Adams went on the COVID list, won't play, the line went to like 6. What? That's more than the Cleveland Brown line changed when Baker Mayfield couldn't play and Case Keenum did. And Baker won a playoff game. Baker's a quarterback. Baker's a friend. This is not a shot at Baker. He's a quarterback. He touches the ball 70 times a game. Vegas, I mean, Baker's a capable quarterback, right? He won a playoff game last year. The line moved more for a wide receiver not playing. Now, does that mean Devontae Adams is more valuable than a franchise quarterback? No, it doesn't. And I love Devontae, and I think he's arguably the best receiver, he and DeAndre Hopkins in the league. And some of the line is he's great. But what that line is telling you is this team is way too dependent on Devontae Adams. They have a really good back and a productive tight end, but this is their most average offensive line probably in Aaron Rodgers' career. The defense is good, but not special. So when that line moved more for a wide receiver not playing than a team, Cleveland losing a franchise quarterback, that's not just about Devontae Adams. That is about the real dilemma for the Packers. Do they have a second receiver they can trust in a big spot? And Vegas thinks, no. Nah. Now they're almost a touchdown underdog. Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, almost a touchdown underdog. So can't wait to watch it. My guess is I like Arizona to win comfortably because this has been my concern. And I think this is not like a revelation. I think you have the same concern as you take Devontae. There are a twisted ankle of Devontae Adams from not being close to a Super Bowl team, just being, you know, good. With Aaron Rodgers, they're always good.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So I got a call, a text on like Thursday or Friday of last week. Jim Gray, who I've known for a long time, great sports reporter, said, hey, Tom Brady, he has a podcast called Let's Go. It's on Sirius XM, and you should listen to it. And he does. I've heard it before. I've driven around, and I hear it. And he said, listen, there's going to be about 12, 15 of you on it. You all get one question. So that you can come on, but yeah, one question. And it was really a cool group of people. Scott Van Pelt was on it. We'd known Scotty for a long time. Chris Berman, Steve Young, you know, some reporters, Jim Nantz, blah, blah, blah. And I was very honored to be even, you know, included in that, right? So Dan Patrick was on it. And so I was on it. And over the weekend, I thought, okay, you got one question. So I never do this. I wrote the question down because I didn't want to screw it up. I thought, I want to ask something that will elicit a really good response. And, you know, everybody, well, I was almost one of the last ones they went to. And that's the way it should have been because I'm, you know, you're just a guy. And he's talking to Steve Young and stuff. So at the end, I got there and I asked him a question. And my question was, Tom, you've had this great career. It's remarkable. And at the end of it, if the owners or a commissioner said, you know, Tom, you really always had, you had a great career. You were so good for us. We're going to allow you one radical change in the NFL. You will be able to do one change. It could be a rule. It could be a CBA. It could be anything. But, Tom, you get to make one structural change to the game that you love, but there's currently something you don't love. What would it be? And Tom gave a five-minute answer, and here's a clip of it.
I think that what's happened over the last 10, 15 years. And I think in the, it's a great question because the game that I played 20 years ago is very different than the game now in the sense that now it's more skills competition than it is physical football. I think in some ways they're taking away a physical element to the game. That was the only way at one point to beat skill was to be tough. And when we played the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were tough. And when we played the teams that were just skillful, we won. And I think what's happening now is the way the rules are being set, I don't think that it's always in the best interests of the game that I once played. I feel like rules are being made. For example, the onus of protecting another player is now on the opponent as opposed to on yourself. So, for example, I threw a touchdown pass. The 600 touchdown pass I ever threw in my career was to Mike Evans yesterday. 10 years ago, I never would have thrown that football because Mike had caught the ball. The safety was standing right there, and the safety essentially can't hit him the way that he used to be able to hit him because all the safeties now are 200 pounds and they all cover. There's a lot of players like Ray Lewis that I didn't throw the ball between the hashes because Ray Lewis was going to knock him out of the game, not because, you know, he was going to, you know, make a tackle. And I think the onus of protecting receivers should be on the quarterback, not on the defensive backs. And the onus of protecting a running back should be on the offensive linemen, not on the tacklers who are trying to tackle the running back. So I don't believe in cheap shots, and I don't think cheap shots should ever be allowed. But if you are a professional athlete, it'd be like being in a boxing ring and saying, don't hit your opponent too hard because you might hurt him.
He went on for another 4 minutes on this and gave multiple examples. Really fascinating. So first of all, it was classic Tom Brady. Conscientious, smart. He'd given this a ton of thought. And he went on and on, and all of it was interesting. I was getting texts by other people on the panel like, wow, this is interesting. And how he sees the world. The second thing is, one of the reasons everybody loves Derrick Henry, he's obviously a great running back, but he adds a physicality to the game. And I remember years and years ago, like 20 years ago, people say, oh, you got to watch Canadian football. And I was younger, like 25 years old. I'm in Vegas, and, Vegas would have everything. You go to a sports book, there were 30 games on. They had mud bog races. They had everything on. And they had Canadian football on. And I had a friend named Randy. He was Canadian. He was like, oh, Canadian football. And I was like, well, they never run. It's just all passing. Like, I like the physicality of football. I like Troy Polamalu. I like Ray Lewis. I like those guys. And you don't get a lot of it. And I thought Tom was interesting when he said, it's now a skills competition. Now, we know why the league is doing this. And this has been discussed. Roger Goodell, I just read a story not long ago, like Roger's biggest fear, Roger Goodell, the commissioner's biggest fear, because the league's on, it's just crushing. If somebody dies, somebody gets hurt. Like seriously, it's his biggest fear. And it's the biggest fear for the business. And so I get it. They have made the game much safer. I'm for it. They have made the game over the middle much friendlier. I'm for it. I think the concerns for concussions are real. And I think the league's done a really good job. Practice is easier. The rules are better. It's never been safer. But athletes are getting bigger, faster, and stronger. And the collisions are sometimes, Patrick Mahomes got hit this weekend, and I was just wincing. I'm like, I'm not going to watch the replay. No thanks. So I thought, the Let's Go podcast, SiriusXM, Jim Gray Brady, very thoughtful. There's a reason why it's happening. But and by the way, Brady is saying this as he benefits from it. This isn't a guy complaining like, hey, I get hit all the time. Brady's benefiting from this. Very rarely does somebody in any industry criticize something they benefit from. I mean, everybody, you go to social media, everybody loves what benefits them. Oh, I love this commentator. He sees the world politically just like I do. Now, you conservatives watch MSNBC. You liberals watch Fox. Let's see how it works for you there. Brady's like, yeah, I benefit greatly from this. And I don't think it's good for the game. So whether it is or not, it was really thoughtful, made me think. Hopefully it makes you think.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
So Michael Irvin, the playmaker, is very funny. He's on the NFL Network, and he said yesterday, nobody is scared of Kansas City and the Chiefs anymore. Nobody. And I'd like to respectfully disagree completely. Mike Tyson was 8 years past his prime. You didn't want to mess with him. And even the fighters who fought him, because of that left hook, would stay out of harm's way. You had to have a respectful level of fear for Mike Tyson, who had the nastiest knockout punch ever. It's not the best fighter ever. It's not the best heavyweight ever. He had the best punch ever, a left hook. It was wild. It didn't land often, but when it did, it knocked out men at 265 pounds that were much bigger. Knocked them out into Tuesday. So Kansas City, for anybody that thinks they're done, just think about this. They're favored by 10 points over the Giants this weekend. Now, 10 points is a lot in the NFL. I'll tell you how much 10 points is. The Jets, with a backup quarterback who are awful, facing the number one seeded Cincinnati Bengals, are also a 10-point underdog. The Giants just won. They've won games this year. They played well last weekend. They're a 10-point dog to Kansas City. Now, Kansas City's not playing well. They still have the 8th best odds, however, to win the Super Bowl, and they, like Tyson, have the best knockout punch. Andy Reid's too smart, Patrick Mahomes too gifted and self-aware, they'll be back. Now, fixed does not mean the Super Bowl. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team this year. I like Buffalo going into the season anyway out of the AFC. Fixed means 11-6, 10-7, and I think they'll get it right. Jeff Schwartz, his brother Mitchell, used to play for the Chiefs, talked about their issues yesterday on our show.
Well, Mahomes is trying to do too much, and I think he's trying to do too much because he feels the pressure from the defense, because the defense is not really stopping anyone, and he's trying to do too much, and it's compounding errors upon errors. Poor drafting. He has covered up a lot of the problems the Chiefs have had, but the problem is when he doesn't cover them up anymore, everything gets exacerbated. I think people writing off the Chiefs are pretty silly, guys. Like, are you telling me that come January, if the Chiefs are the 6 or 7 seed, you're going to feel comfortable with your favorite team playing Kansas City? Like, you're not, okay? So they'll be fine. They'll figure it out. They got the Giants Monday Night Football recovery game. They'll be 4-4. They'll be okay, guys.
By the way, every good team in the AFC has a flaw. The Bills, offensive line, run game, pretty average. Bengals, offensive line worries you. Bills don't run the ball particularly well. Baltimore's pass defense, kind of a wreck. I would say New England, they're emerging. They got a rookie quarterback with kind of a low ceiling athletically. Raiders have an interim head coach. Kansas City, bad defensively, too many turnovers. So, you know, I mean, the Chargers I like, but the middle of their defense you can run on. They got a rookie head coach. So everybody has got sort of an issue in the AFC. And I think Kansas City's issue is not entirely fixable because a lot of it is personnel. But if you have a left hook, you're always feared in boxing. If you have those weapons and that coach and that quarterback, and you're always feared. By the way, Joy just said this during the break. So yesterday a story came out. And so let me give you some, I'll make this as delicate as I can. A lot of times a story will come out and it'll be on another show with another host, or it'll be a reporter break it. And I'm not going to badmouth the host or badmouth the reporter, but I don't believe the story. People say a lot of things. So yesterday, Mike Tomlin is coming out and he's a candidate for the USC job. So I called USC's athletic director the second I got off the show, and I'm not going to divulge anything there. But I will tell you, I didn't really buy into it. I think he'd be great. I think he'd be amazing. I think it's fun to talk about. It's good for shows like mine. But let me ask you, why would the Rooneys let him go? There's like 8 good coaches in the NFL. He's one of them. Why in the world would you let Mike Tomlin go? You know, if USC came and made an offer, I'd be like, all right, go ahead. You guys understand they're going through a transition? They probably never needed Mike Tomlin more than now. You know, 7 years ago, there were probably a lot of coaches that could have won games in Pittsburgh because a Big Ben was in his prime. And right now, there are not a lot of coaches. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, and that includes the Duck Hodges year. So he's never been more needed in Pittsburgh than now. Now, I think it's a fun topic. It's interesting. Mike Silver came on yesterday. It's fun. But today, Mike Tomlin was asked about the USC job. Mike Tomlin was asked about it. I'm going to read you a direct quote. That's a joke for me, said Tomlin. I got one of the best jobs in pro sports. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? Never say never, but never. He also said, there's not a check big enough from a booster at USC, to get me that job. Yeah, listen, pro jobs are better than college jobs. They just are. It's a better brand of football. You're dealing with men, not kids. You don't have to deal with the NCAA. You don't have to deal with high-maintenance, needy boosters. You don't have to deal with the weekly luncheon with the, sign this and sign that. College football can be a drag. I mean, Nick Saban would not be in college football if he got Drew Brees in Miami. He would have never coached college football. He did it. LSU, Michigan State, he stayed in the NFL. So NFL's a better job than college football. It's a better job. The pensions are better. No NCAA, no boosters. You just don't bail on like the Steelers. Y'all get that, right? Jags, maybe you bail someday. You don't bail on the Rooney family. It's a good roster. They just need a younger quarterback.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Listen, Baltimore, we're 7 games through. Their pass defense is atrocious, and they have several one-possession wins. Kansas City, Detroit, the Colts. Remember, they were outplayed by the Lions. They could have lost to both the Colts. They were outplayed for 3 quarters by the Colts, and they got crushed at home. It's a very good football team. They have been really banged up. I think they're fine. But I think right now they're about the 10th best team in the league, and here's why. Here's number nine.
Number nine.
I'm going to give it to Cincinnati because they have the same record, and they just blew them out in Baltimore. I have concerns about their offensive line. I think Zach Taylor's a good coach. I mean, they're getting better, so I think he can, but it's really a Joe Burrow story. He's got, you know, 300-plus yards in 7 of his 17 starts, and that's, by the way, with a rebuilding offensive line. Ja'Marr Chase is an absolute home run. They've hit some home runs last couple of years in their draft, and their defense against the run is better than it gets credit for. Cincinnati at nine.
Number eight.
The Raiders. What do I do with the Raiders? Listen, since Gruden left, Derek Carr's better, like significantly better. Maybe the anxiety of Gruden and the, you know, the scowl on the sidelines, whatever it is, Derek Carr's got five games of over 300-yard passing. That is the most in the NFL this year. The protection can be spotty, but they've got a running game. They've got eight guys that can catch the ball. And their schedule, hey, listen, they got a bye this week and the Giants next week. So it's not getting tougher. So right, and Kansas City's not playing well. So you got to be fair with them. I did not think they'd be good. I've always been a fan of Derek Carr. But right now, I think the Raiders are a top 10 team, and I would put them at eight.
Number seven.
But I think they lose in a neutral field to the Green Bay Packers. Now, this week, Devontae Adams is out. So let's be fair here. That's a huge loss. David Bakhtiari, left tackle, comes back. The Packers to me this year have been somewhere 6, 7, 8. They don't feel like offensively they have a second receiver they trust. Randall Cobb's been nice but spotty. I do worry about their offensive line. Bakhtiari helps. But I don't think they would beat the number six team if they played in a neutral field.
Number six.
And that's the Titans, who, by the way, have placed the most players on IR in the league, and they're still red hot. But they did lose to the Jets, and this is why I got to keep them here. They've been a little hot and cold half to half, and I do think they would have lost to the Bills had Josh Allen not slipped. They were outgained, outplayed, out time of possession. But I will say this. They scored in their first five possessions against the Chiefs. They played downhill. If they get a lead on you, watch out, because Derrick Henry and that offensive line can punish you. Fifth win in their last six games. And I've always thought Mike Vrabel is a good coach that we don't talk about. He's a former player. You know, he's not a guy that has a lot of tolerance for standing at the mic, and, you know, he doesn't promote himself. And so we don't talk about Mike Vrabel much. I think Mike Vrabel's a really good coach. I think he's a really, really good football coach.
Number five.
But I think they'd lose to the Rams if they played head-to-head, because I think Matt Stafford and McVay, if they get a lead on you, they don't lose. 42-0 is Sean McVay when a lead at half. That's pretty good. They were great on third downs. The Stafford has been sacked seven times this year, fewest by any quarterback in the league, and he's not mobile. So it's a big-time offensive line. They've got some depth now at running back. They've overcome the Cam Akers injury. Cooper Kupp looks like Randy Moss. Nobody can stop him. Rams at five.
Number four.
Bills at four. I know they lost to Tennessee, but they outplayed them. I like this team a lot. Upcoming schedule is weak. Dolphins, Jags, Jets. They're going to go on a big winning streak here. They have the number two scoring offense and the number one scoring defense. Don't overreact to a couple of close losses. Bills at four.
Number three.
Listen, you say what you want about the Dallas Cowboys right now, folks. They're averaging 6.6 yards a play. That's the most in the NFL. And that's a game against Belichick. Okay, so Belichick's the best defensive coach in the league. They could be the first team in NFL history with 2,000-yard rushers, Zeke and Tony Pollard, and 2,000-yard receivers, CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. They've got possession receivers, flashy receivers, power backs, wiggle backs, O-line's healthy. I love this team. Cowboys have outgained every opponent this year, including the Bucs, week one.
Number two.
Arizona, only undefeated team. I think they'll win this Thursday. Kyler Murray leads the NFL in completion percentage, and that's important because we think of Kyler Murray as, oh, flash, big plays. You know what? Kyler Murray is efficient, and that he was not in his first 2 years. You got the big play, but he missed a lot of layups. He no longer misses layups. I think their GM, Steve Keim, has taken big chances. J.J. Watt has worked. They're getting healthier, by the way. They've only allowed 16 points a game this year, tied for the best in the NFL. That's pretty scary. When you get that dynamic offense and that good a defense, that feels like Tampa last year.
Number one.
The Buccaneers. They have now won, fifth win by 20 points since Brady joined the team. And what you're seeing with them is, as the league gets younger at quarterback, they get smarter and better at quarterback. The defense is playing better. Now, the secondary is still banged up, and that would be tough against Arizona. But they were missing Antonio Brown and Gronk, and they led 35-0 at half or had 35 points. This team has it all. They don't have a real weakness. I don't think they're great at corner, but when they're healthy, they're not terrible. And I think if you look at Tampa, neutral field with Tom Brady and that depth and those weapons and that wide receiver, I think it would be the best team in the league. And that's how I look at this. Neutral field, who would you take? I think the Bucs would beat Arizona and Dallas. Dallas almost lost to New England. So let's look at it again. Arizona 2, Dallas, Buffalo. I know Buffalo's got two losses. I don't care. First of all, week one, I almost throw out. Week one, because starters no longer play in the preseason. Week one is like extended preseason. And a game against Tennessee, they outgained them. They outplayed them. They had more time of possession. So I don't hold that against them. It's not a punitive loss. Rams, Titans, Packers, Raiders, Bengals, Ravens.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He's a Hall of Famer, one of my favorite guys. 13 years, six-time Pro Bowler, Walter Payton Man of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year. He's done it all, and he now lives in Atlanta. His son is playing football as well. Jerome Bettis joins us live, but his son, he's like his dad. He's smart. He said, "Dad, there's no money at running back. I'm going to be a wide receiver. I'm not going to get hit. I'm going to go out of bounds." Don't blame him, by the way. I don't blame him at all.
Where's the toughness?
Toughness.
He's a running back.
I know. The lettuce is all at wide receiver. So Mike Tomlin's name came up for the USC job. And listen, Mike would crush. But I want you to take me inside to Tomlin. He laughed at it and he said, "You can't write a check big enough." I don't think the Steelers would ever let him go. Your take on Tomlin and rumors that he would leave, because there are rumors out there that he's about to leave Pittsburgh.
I don't see that happening. I think it'd be really hard for a college to get a coach like Tomlin. One, he's very matter-of-fact. And so, you know, sometimes for a 17, 18-year-old kid, he may not understand that or appreciate that. Now, a grown man, you appreciate the honesty and the clarity and where you are. But sometimes in college, you just can't be as aggressive as he is as a head coach. So I just think it may not bode well for him in college. But I think he, you know, if anybody were to pry him away from Pittsburgh, they were beginning one of the best coaches in all of football, you know, at any level. So I still don't think he's going
to
go, though.
No, I think it's actually a great point. He's blunt and to the point, and, you know, 17, 18-year-olds may not want to handle that. Now,
yeah.
Najee Harris, he's not a breakaway running back. Like you, he's got power, and like you, he can make people miss. What do you see with the rookie from Alabama for the Steelers?
You know, I see a running back that has the ability to do everything. He can do it all. So, you know, you could throw it to him 10 times out of the backfield and he's going to make big plays for you. You can give it to him 25 times out of the backfield and he's going to change the game. And that's what you want from your star running back. You want him to be able to change the outcome of the game. And if you give him those opportunities, he's going to do it. And I think he's shown a little bit, you know, in terms of the passing game. He had, you know, 100 yards receiving earlier. We saw the 100 yards rushing. And I think once they're able to put it all together and get that type of consistency from him every week, then all of a sudden you see him going to a different stratosphere.
Listen, I was told years ago, I was told this by somebody, they say the hardest player to coach in the NFL is an aging star quarterback. A Dan Marino, Jimmy Johnson struggled with that. It's hard. I get it. Big Ben's not the same player. He's taken a lot of hits, not always the most rigid off-season workout program, and here we are at the end. What do you do? I mean, what do you do with Ben at this point?
Well, I think the key for Ben is protection. Obviously, he's gotten older, and the feet don't work the way they used to in terms of extending plays and being that real physically dominating quarterback out there. So now you have to tweak what you're doing. You can't expect him to be that 25, 27-year-old quarterback anymore. You have got to now protect him a little different than you did in years past, where you didn't have to have the best offensive line in the world. Well, now you've got to put the priority on the offensive line, because if you give him time, he can still spin it. But if you're asking him to elude the rush and make plays with his feet, that's not going to happen anymore. So I just think they have to understand what they have, much like Tampa understood what they had in Tom Brady, and they went out and the first pick was an offensive tackle. And
right.
They said, you know what? We're going to make the offensive line a priority because we've got to protect this guy. He can still spit it, but he can't move like he used to. And I think that's what the Steelers have to understand. He can't move like he used to, but he can still throw it, protect him.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't think that – I mean, listen, you know how it goes in the NFL draft. Half of these quarterbacks don't work, and you got Lamar Jackson. You got Joe Burrow. I mean, Baker Mayfield won a playoff game. I could see them absolutely saying, let's not mess around. We got the defense. We got the running back. Let's go get Aaron Rodgers. We'll give up three picks. I think that works. I think Aaron fits them. He's never had a great defensive head coach. Your thoughts on Aaron to Pittsburgh, which I don't think is a flimsy rumor. I could see it.
I can see it. And the one reason that I can see it is because every team has a championship window. And this defense is a championship defense. Unfortunately, the window will close eventually. So they've still got a 3-year window,
right.
I would think, in terms of the defense being playoff and championship caliber. Now, they have now got to figure out, do we have enough time to develop a young quarterback in that window? And so do we have to just now go out and secure our quarterback so now we can have an opportunity to win a championship in that window? And I think when you look at an Aaron Rodgers or a player of that caliber, absolutely, considering they haven't got it figured out for the guy behind them. That's the big problem. When you don't have it figured out, then you want to try to go out and find something that you know is consistent.
Right.
And Aaron Rodgers is best in the business.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I had not thought of that. They have all these young defensive players, and they're all going to get paid here within 2 to 3 years. So you better take advantage of that window. Finally, Derrick Henry, some would say he's got some Jerome Bettis. He's certainly powerful. Did you think he would be this good as a pro?
I did not. I knew he was going to be really good. You know, I followed him from high school. I mean, he was a top high school running back in the country. I mean, he did amazing things. And then you say, okay, well, he gets to college. I don't know how well that's going to, how he's going to develop in college. Was sensational in college. And then I said, okay, when he gets to the NFL, these guys are a little bit different. They're a lot twitchier, fast twitch. These guys are going to get to him
right.
a little quicker, not going to allow him to get going. And boy, was I wrong. I think, one, he got with the right team. Because had he gone to anywhere else, he probably wouldn't have got that opportunity. Early in his career, he wasn't. They were two platooning him, not
That's right.
giving him
That's
those
right.
25, 30 carries. So originally, people were like a little skittish on him. But then everything turned around. And once they gave it to him 25 times and saw, uh-oh, he could do some things. I think that changed everything. And I think the running back, he got hurt. The little guy that was came in from
DeMarco,
New England, he got hurt.
Yes, yes.
And so they had to go with him.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, we got something.
Yeah.
I think they realized it, and he's been rolling ever since.
Yeah, everybody's an expert on Derrick Henry, but he was a platoon player for the first 2 years
yes.
in this league. He was not like Zeke. He was not Adrian Peterson, where he was a home run initially. All right, yesterday, I was just telling the staff, yesterday afternoon, I had Quaker Oats and Blueberry for a snack, because I had blueberries that they go stale in about an hour and a half from the grocery store. You are working with Quaker Oats, the Quaker Oats Good Time Challenge. What is it?
Well, we're trying to inspire people to help tackle hunger and support Feeding America. And how do we do that? It's called the Quaker Good Card Challenge. We're asking people to just get an empty canister, like a Quaker canister, and turn into a bank. Collect some spare change that's in your car, that's in your seat cushions, somewhere all over your home, as it would be, and take that change to your local CoinStar kiosk and select Feeding America. And I'm telling you, it's going to make a difference, because Quaker has already donated $125,000 that's going to be going to Feed America. And we want to do that to just get those meals out, because 38 million people in America are facing hunger. So we can do some good in this really, in this holiday season.
Yep. Jerome, you're always so thoughtful. Good luck to your son and your family living in a beautiful city, Atlanta. It's great seeing you again. Love to have you on whenever you have an opening.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I'm not a traditionalist. I tend to be maybe to a fault the other way. I'm looking for new stuff. I get bored very quickly. I'm not going to romanticize the past. Maybe it's because I had a weird childhood and I don't want to look back.
Don't look in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe I need a therapist. But the point being is, it was so funny to listen to all the names that come out. Oh, Jeff Fisher. And I'm like, okay, are you watching football? It's an offensive game. I love Jeff Fisher, but when he left the NFL, it was like, could not get a job. And I mean, this is a well-connected guy because very outdated offense. This is a Pac-12. Even as good as USC was, who do we remember from USC? Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush. It was an offensive program. The defense was fun, but we all talked about Reggie and Matt. Okay, it was all with that. It wasn't about the defense. Nick Saban now acknowledges. Nick Saban acknowledges, I can't stop anybody. So, then Pete Carroll, he's 70. Even with Russell Wilson, the offense looks outdated. So it's like, folks, look what's happening for these jobs. Like, look what's happening. Mario Cristobal, offensive side of the ball guy at Oregon. He's been a big hit. Chip Kelly, UCLA, finally has a pulse. He's an offensive guy. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss. He's an offensive guy. Like, and again, you can say Nick Saban. Nick has been brilliant, acknowledging I can't win with defense. This is, by the way, not a very good Alabama defense by Alabama standards. What Nick has really done in the last 6 years, hired great coordinators and recruit the heck out of the quarterback wide receiver position. Their defense this year is not the story. It's their offense. So, I know we romanticize Jeff Fisher and Pete Carroll, but if you're asking me who I'd hire, I say this all the time. Look at the NFL right now. I mean, look around the NFL right now. What coaches are we going, what's going on? Brian Flores, defense, Vic Fangio, defense, Ron Rivera, all could have had a quarterback. Yet McVay lobbied to get a better quarterback. Cliff Kingsbury lobbied for Kyler Murray. It's the offensive coaches now that are overwhelmingly controlling this league.
Well, I think because USC is such a high-profile job, it feels very scary to go with someone who doesn't have a very long resume, even though they may be the right person for the job. You're going to go to default what you know, which is how Mike Tomlin's name got put in this.
So this is very interesting. This is a very interesting thing. I want to talk to everybody about this. This is very interesting because I had a friend call me the other day, and he said, he's a smart guy. He runs a business. He said, it's not a good year for candidates. And I said to my friend Brian, it's never a good year for candidates. Did anybody know Mario Cristobal? You didn't even know who he was. I think he got demoted at one point in the Alabama staff. He's a home run at Oregon. You didn't know. When Pete Carroll got hired for USC, I can remember being on a plane. I was going to Mexico with friends for a weekend. I'm like, what a terrible hire. He just got fired in the NFL. Pete Carroll's one of the best coaches ever. You never know. Like, when Urban Meyer goes from, like, Florida to Ohio State, but did you really think that an old, crusty coach from Cincinnati would turn Notre Dame back into a top-five program? Brian Kelly's face turned purple. He coached at small colleges. Cincinnati was in his 50s. Brian Kelly, he's the best Notre Dame coach since Lou Holtz. You just don't know. Tom Coughlin coached. I remember him coaching at Boston College. They beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame was number one. And you're like, all right. And then he goes to Jacksonville, and you're like, oh, he made the playoffs. And then he goes to New York. It's like, oh, they beat Belichick twice. Who would have guessed Tom Coughlin, who gets mad and his face looks like a plum? He's purple. He's windblown. He's grumpy. He's like a Hall of Fame coach. You do not know. So everybody, and this is why fans go back to what they know. Well, Jeff Fisher won a bunch of games in the NFL, and Pete Carroll was good here, and Mike Tomlin was good here. Folks, sometimes you get so surprised. I had never heard of P.J. Fleck. I don't know. He goes to Minnesota. And I mean, when James Franklin was at Vanderbilt, I don't know who James Franklin was. Now he's like a rock star. So I understand everybody going back to Pete Carroll and Jeff Fisher and Mike Tomlin, because we know we've got memories of winning. But if you're asking me what I would do, I would go get a young, smart offensive coach. And I'll say it again. I would get Doug Peterson, who's still really young. He coached under Andy Reid. He went to Philadelphia. He won a Super Bowl. With Nick Foles, he out-dueled Brady and Belichick, and he's been on the beach. He's made good money. He kind of is a laid-back guy. I think the college thing, he's not too power hungry. He's not too rigid. He'd come to LA. He'd play big. He's got kind of a Chip Kelly vibe where he's kind of cool and smart. But Mike Tomlin, by the way, was asked about this job, and I couldn't believe it got so much. I mean, listen, it was on the Dan Patrick Show and Carson Palmer, so we know who they are, and it got some momentum. But, I mean, Tomlin literally was almost offended by it. Here's his thoughts about it today.
Any point in your coaching career, did you ever have an interest or express an interest in being a head coach in the college game? And do you have any idea how that may or may not have led to folks like Ryan and Doug Whaley and Carson Palmer connecting you to some college jobs?
Hey, guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
And I think, you know, it's really funny. He was kind of pissed. And what he's basically saying is, I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers coach. You think I'm a college coach? And to be honest with you, the best coaching is in the NFL by far. Like, it's not close. Like, in the NFL, you can have – I mean, this is something I've talked to coaches about. Like, in the NFL, if you have a bad first half, a coach can literally flip the switch and you can have a great second half. You can correct flaws in a half, in the locker room in 15 minutes. In college football, it may take a month if the coaching staff can change a problem. You can never do it in a game. Like, it takes, like, weeks of figuring out. And maybe it's because the kids are young. But in the NFL, I've seen coaches, literally, you watch the first half and you're like, this is terrible. I mean, New England's never scored a touchdown in the first quarter of any Super Bowl game. And the second half, you're like, hey, moving up and down on the Legion of Boom. You're like, what? I think Mike Tomlin's saying, you think that job, they get me? I'm Mike Tomlin. You think I'm going to take that job? I think he was offended by it. And he's not wrong. Like, Sean, would we ask Sean Payton? Would we ask Andy Reid? And again, let's stop looking backwards for the next coach. If you want a coach, everybody's always reaching back. Go find a young 29, 31-year-old. Call Lane Kiffin again if you want. I mean, he's offensively, he's really now, he's done a really good job in his last two jobs. But I understand the romance of it, but the answer rarely in life is trying to duplicate the good old days. It doesn't work with movies, tech. It doesn't work in sports. The good old days, A, are never as good as you think. And the truth is, once people get rich and successful and stuck in their ways, they're often not as good the second time around, or not as good as a new play. You know, people forget this about Nick Saban. Nick Saban went to Michigan State. He was successful, but it's not like he made him into a power. And then he went to LSU, and I mean, the fourth year in, they were losing like 3-4 games. He won a national title. He failed in the NFL. So he had a lot to prove at Alabama. Like, he was a recruiting, you know, 90-hour-a-week guy. So he went into the NFL with something to prove. Pete Carroll, by the way, had been fired twice in the NFL. Pete Carroll went to USC with something to prove. You think you're going to get that same Pete now? Pete's got $60 million in the bank. He already succeeded. You're not going to get the same Pete Carroll. Pete's 70 now. You're not going to get the same Pete. Jeff Fisher, he's got money in the bank, NFL pension as a player, as a coach. You're not getting the same Jeff Fisher. And Mike Tomlin, I do think, would crush. But I guess my point here is the answer is rarely in the rearview mirror. Go work hard and find the next special person. That person's out there. You just got to interview and you got to look and you got to beat the bushes. But you know, oh, that guy, you wouldn't get the, I literally USC fans yesterday, let's get Pete Carroll. You're not getting the same Pete Carroll. You're not getting 50, you know, how old was he? You're not getting 51-year-old Pete Carroll, who just got fired. People thought it was a terrible hire. They laughed at Pete Carroll. He had something to prove. You're not getting that Pete Carroll at 70. You're getting a guy that's got massive money, a house on the North Shore, on one of the islands in Hawaii. And by the way, I already won here. You're not getting all those 16-hour days that you got with a 51-year-old Pete.